if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour.
We stand for Queen, Country, and Video Games. BRB UK. Worse teeth, better accents.
Hello, hello, and indeed ahoy hoy, and welcome to episode 290. That is episode 300 less 10.
Uh-oh.
It's getting close. Episode 300 is crowning out of the virtual canal of podcast stuff. I tried not to make a disgusting reference there, but I think I failed. I am Dan.
You failed miserably.
What?
You failed miserably.
I haven't even introduced myself, and you're already kicking off.
That's what I do, Dan. Get used to it.
Yeah, I'm Dan, that's Tim.
Hello.
Coleman, say hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you doing, sir?
New mics. We've got new mics.
You got new mics?
Same old faces, though, unfortunately.
Well, it's a good job they don't record. Unless you're doing microphones wrong, Tim, they don't record your face.
They may not have been calibrated properly, so it's a gamble this week.
Wicked.
Yeah.
Excellent. It's a crap shoot.
Yeah.
Lovely. That's my favourite kind of shoot.
I prefer a fruit shoot myself if I was drinking them.
Apart from the first person or third person shoot. So news! So stuff has been happening because you two chaps were at Resd and you did a Resd show.
Yes.
I was not at Resd, so I was not on the Resd show.
No.
Probably good for you because it went up for like 2 hours.
Yeah, I noticed. I was like, ah.
Yeah, it was a good show though. Thank you to Ed for joining us and filling in some details and, yeah, rounding out our kind of coverage for, yeah, Resd, which was great.
Good.
And yeah, there has subsequently been a bit more written content gone up on the site and a couple of video bits and bobs as well up on our YouTube thing as well. So
splendid. So all of your senses can be saturated with Resd goodness. Okay, so we've got sight, check.
Yep.
Reading, that's another sense. Check. That's what they told me at medical school. Touch. Is touch covered, Tim?
You can touch the computer screen?
Taste.
Does that count?
Taste. Is taste covered?
You can lick the computer screen.
I mean,
right, okay.
Some of my clothes still smell like people from Resd. And
oh,
you know when something smells
nice.
So bad that you can taste it?
Nice. So,
that's two senses knocked down there.
Nice. So Coleman, that needs some explanation. Furnish me with your tales.
Do you know what? It's not as bad as... Because EGX Resd is a tobacco dock and it's quite sort of open and airy anyway, so that's fine. It's EGX proper at the NEC,
yeah.
That's the worst one.
There's not that EGX hum at Resd.
Yeah, I had the worst one last year when I knelt down to get something out of my bag and as someone walked past, they crop dusted me square in the face.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm surprised how often that happens.
People just running up to you and just randomly just twatting you in the face.
Well, not on a daily basis.
They give me the beat. I get a 1 day a week break from the beatings at work. Talking of, hey Tim, you've got a Switch.
I have a Switch.
Coleman,
you
have
a Switch.
Switch,
Dan.
I do.
I have a Switch. Everyone has a Switch.
We all have Switches.
Everyone has a Switch. Well, our Switches have now been cracked wide open. Wide open!
Wide open!
Mess everywhere!
Dropped them on the floor.
What does this mean for the average Switch consumer, Dan?
At the moment, not much. But there has been a very profound hardware flaw exposed by various groups of hackers is kind of the wrong term, but tinkerers, there we go.
No,
various groups
no,
of tinkerers.
I want hackers. Say hackers.
Right, okay, it can be hackers.
Hack the planet.
Is that hackers with an ERS
Angelina
or a Z?
Jolie.
Yes, with a Z.
With a Z.
Angelina
okay,
Jolie's.
So Lee's Leet Hackers.
That's right.
Better?
Hack the planet.
Yes, very good.
Good.
Techno. Okay, Coleman, just imagine an iconic hat, okay? Iconic hat.
Okay.
Okay, better?
I love iconic hat.
So, yes, there is a very profound hardware-level flaw with
Why is it profound,
that
Dan?
FLAW, Timothy. before you start. with the NVIDIA Tegra chip that powers the Switch.
Right.
And it's unpatchable. You cannot patch it. It is impossible to patch. It is a flaw in like the lowest level of code you can get in a microprocessor. It's at that level.
Right.
So
that sounds
the
bad.
Only way you can fix a switch, well, if indeed it is fixing, but to be able to block this particular bug, is by replacing the CPU or APU in this case on the switch, which may explain why a chip revision or references to a chip revision was in the most recent switch firmware update.
Yes, and that does actually give credence to the rumor that there might be a revised piece of hardware coming on the way for Switch. That would make sense in light of this news, and if they'd found out that this had happened, that's something they would obviously be looking at steps to prevent, at least on, you know, future sold consoles, even if they couldn't do anything about the ones that are out there in the wild.
But potentially, this means that if you have an OG Switch like we do,
yay,
you will be, at some point, have only got Linux, happy common, Linux, yep, or Linux, however you want to pronounce it.
Still Linux.
No, it's Linux. The bloke who made it's called Linus.
Yeah.
So it's Linux.
Is he the still same Linux one from Peanuts?
No. We've had this conversation before, I'm fairly certain.
This is the GIF GIF thing all over again.
I can feel my knickers twisting at the moment, by mentioning
that. It's not GIF
that
anymore, it's SIF. They changed it.
You are a f***ing idiot.
Weren't they the bad guys in
Shut
Star
up
Wars? Okay.
No, that was the that was the First Order. It sounds nothing like Sith or Jif or Waz or stuff.
No, but Sith sounds quite similar. I think you skipped a generation of anyway. Yep.
Is that what you put on pancakes?
Yes.
Yes, Sith. You can put Sith on pancakes, Connor. Let me know how that goes.
No, that's Jizz.
Oh, what?
Jizz on pancakes.
Oh, God, Tim's done a Dan.
Oh, God. It's finally taken 290 episodes, but I've broken him. And also, Tim, you're slightly wrong. That's the biscuit game you're thinking of. So it basically all they've been able to do is get the Linux or Linux operating system, depending if you're coal man or not,
right,
running on things. So that shows that you can run arbitrary code. And in plain English, that means emulators, homebrew, all kinds of stuff, and sadly, probably opens a door to piracy as well, which
I really
hope that doesn't gain too much traction.
You know what? I'd quite like to play Sea of Thieves on the Switch, to be honest.
Not those sorts of pirates, Coleman.
It's going to be one of those shows, isn't it?
Yep.
Got ourselves on the Switch. Yarr! Who'll be hacking my Switch?
Don't you tell that Miyamoto we got on the console. Switches get stitches.
Shigeru the Timbers.
Don't ye be a Switch snitch.
The Switch.
Switch snitch.
Oh, God. Anyway, so it's quite a big deal, really. But I think, you know, one of the few reasons that the PSP was actually popular was because people managed to hack into that and make it run all kinds of cool stuff. And the Switch runs all kinds of cool stuff already, in my humble opinion, but it could potentially be running even more cool stuff, especially if Nintendo doesn't remove their thumb from their arse and get Virtual Console working on the Switch for reasons why that isn't a thing I still haven't quite worked out.
They don't have to anymore because they've got a third-party company bringing in Neo Geo and arcade ports and stuff that are also dealing with Nintendo and Microsoft, so they can bring them in and carry on charging you for it.
Yeah, there's a lot of rumours that they're like shelving the idea of having a virtual console on the Switch, but some of those, and it depends on which rumor pool you're kind of pooling your resources from, but some of those rumors are indicating that that might be because they're looking at a and I don't know why everyone goes to this phraseology, but the Netflix style approach or the PlayStation Plus style approach type thing.
Isn't it more the Xbox Game Pass style approach?
Yeah.
I like to think of it as the Hulu style approach.
Hulu,
the bloody WWE hipster.
No, sorry. I like to go for the WWE Network style approach.
I like to go for the Woo Wacky TV type approach.
But
Crunchyroll.
Yeah, that's right.
No, there is a phrase that covers that already. It's called the subscription model. Like, that covers it without going to the word Netflix.
I think you'll find we updated the term subscription model to Crunchyroll model.
to stuff as a service is what we like to call it now.
Spotify.
Gamify. Mind you, to be fair though, Virtual Console was just a brand, since it wasn't a platform level thing that allowed, say, a Wii U or a 3DS or a Wii to run old gen software. It was essentially a recompiling of existing code into an application that could be run by that system. So, but Nintendo, release some of your own old stuff. That wonderful crap that you've put on the mini SNES and the mini NES that approximately three people can play because you don't know how to manufacture enough of the bloody things. Just put that. Charge me 25 quid and put that on the Switch and I'll bloody buy it for those games.
Yeah, they should at least do like game collection things. But it does sound like that they might be holding off from that for... I hasten to say like good reasons or a positive approach, but basically they're holding off from that just because they've been successful at what they're doing so far, and that would possibly detract from a lot of the good publicity, not publicity, but the good kind of goodwill that they've engendered through doing well with indies in this generation. And
basically the Switch has been cracked because they haven't got enough games out.
That's not true at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying, yeah, like bringing the Virtual Console thing may detract from the kind of the good work that they've done with indie games already, which I can see that being.
I think the two can be mutually exclusive, I think.
Yeah, it's just a matter of, I think it's more a matter of timing and doing it right. And if they are going for a, you know, subscription type model thing, then I could actually see that being preferable to a lot of gamers anyway, no?
It's a slippery slope though.
Well, as long as it doesn't cost too much to slip on, I don't mind.
But going right. back to the crack, the Switch crack.
Back what? To the crack.
Back to what? The crack.
Back to the crack. Is that it, that sounds in the context of Tim saying, "Oh, I'd like to slip on that," and back to the crack sounds like an A&E attendance waiting to happen. It just got up there, the Joy-Con. I was
HD Rumble. I just wanted to see how it...
HD Rumble. Come on, man, you must understand.
But how did the condom get on the Joy-Con then?
Well, because Tim, you're fastidiously clean, aren't you, Tim?
Well, look, there's no point taking those sorts of risks, is there, really?
No.
But anyway, back to the news.
A Joy-Con bomb, if you will, Tim.
At hand, the one we were talking to.
A Joy-Con... Yes. Oh, come on! Joy-Con bomb.
So what else does this crack mean for the Switch, Dan?
What else does it mean? Well, you can run all kinds of... Well, potentially all kinds of goodness in the future. And, you know...
By goodness, you actually mean badness, yes?
Well, potentially. But, you know, it could open the door to people being able to do all kinds of cool stuff with their Switch. And... The other flip side of it is that it could enable piracy. It could enable people to bypass copy protection on games that they've extracted from the ROMs themselves. Mm. That could happen technically if you don't own the game, emulating old systems and running ROM images if you don't own them. That's illegal as well. So it's one of those things where at the moment it's very much a hobbyist thing, I think, and you really, all they've managed to get running is a distribution of Linux, whatever you want to call it, Coleman. Although they have got the touch controller working, and I think Wi-Fi and Bluetooth too. So, you know...
Do you think this could actually drive up the prices? If you've got an original Switch,
almost certainly. Almost certainly in a couple of years' time,
it
would.
PSPs all over again.
Yeah, it could work in our favour, this, so it's no bad thing.
Could well do. So, there we go. So Switch, crack wide open, all over the place. In switchy bits, all over the floor. And in my hair, and up the wall.
Talking of pirates, Dan.
Right, talking of... Do you know who the natural enemy of the pirate is?
Ninja.
Ninjas.
Nope, lawyer.
Damn it.
Turns out the lawyer is the natural enemy of the pirate, because Microsoft is being sued over Sea of Thieves.
Why?
Others.
Well, I think you'll find that they infringed two patents, particularly number 6,362,822 and also 7,061,488, which are two of my personal favourite US patents. But they do apparently refer to the Infernal Engine, and Microsoft have been accused of infringing in an egregious and willful manner the patents for said engine. Choo-choo.
What's with the choo-choo?
Can you... Because engine...
The Infernal Engine.
Thomas... Okay. The tank engine.
Thomas the Tank Engine's evil twin, the Infernal Engine.
Infernal Engine. Thomas's nemesis.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay, explain that in English that, you know, lay people like me understand.
Okay. Right. Ready?
Maybe.
They've stolen code and passed it off of their... allegedly stolen code and passed it off as their own. Easy in doing it yourself, isn't it?
Like, they had long enough to work on Sea of Thieves to not have to steal bits from other people.
They had long enough to work on Sea of Thieves to put a lot more things in that game. And
the lawsuit states it's not just Sea of Thieves, it's that the game engine.
No, but it's also allegedly Gears of War 4, Halo 5 as well.
But
so, okay. So apparently the game engine's used in a number of Microsoft games do nick bits, allegedly nick bits of the Infernal Engine. Anyway, if that is the case, naughty, naughty Microsoft. That's why you can't have nice things.
Yeah. Do you think they just did it to be, like, obviously maybe not with Halo and Gears of War, but do you think they just did it with Sea of Thieves to be thematically appropriate? They decided to steal some engines.
It's an interesting theory, and I would like to see that put to a jury of their peers.
Yes,
it's
amusing.
It's a game about pirates.
And we did steal it, but it was only to be thematically appropriate, so...
Although I do secretly wish it was the case software pirates did just kind of roll around in like pirate boats. I think that would be cool. I think if you're going to be enough of a dick to steal things off people, you ought to be duty bound to roll around it in a sloop. Even if you don't live near any body of water, you just have to try and push a sloop around whenever you want to go to the shops and pay for everything in pieces of eight.
I used to work in the same building as a credit card company, and quite often they dress up like at the end of the month or before they go out on the Raz after work. And when I first started there...
Is that because they charge people 1,322% APR for borrowing a fiver?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's, you're thinking of payday loans. Not great.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, there was... when I first started, they were all dressed up as pirates, and I thought, that's thematically... that's seems right. You know, dressed up as a bunch of crooks and thieves.
No.
So I heard that Valve acquired Campo Santo.
Talking of buying things...
Right.
They didn't buy them.
Well, how else did they acquire them?
They mitosed with them.
They went, hey.
You can't mitose with something. That's my apology. Sorry, can I just apologise for any cell biology nerds out there? You can't mitose with something. Something mitoses. My bad. It's been a long day at work.
Good.
I'm sure someone would have picked that up. So Gabe Newell, he drove up in a white transit van outside Camposanto, and he's like, hey, guys, psst, you want some sweets? And then they got in the van, and he drove off, and now they own Camposanto.
That would be a better story if he was in a Campo van.
A Campo van.
Or if it was at Christmas time, it could be Camposanto then.
So it wasn't mentioned in the report I read, but I heard on one of the IGN podcasts earlier that they've not acquired Campo Santo, and now it's like Campo Santo is a Valve studio. It's, they've taken the 12 employees of Campo Santo. They've now joined Valve. They are, you know, Campo Santo is no more. Valley of the Gods will come out and will be a Valve game.
Okay. And interrupt me if I'm reading too much into this.
Okay.
Sounds like there might have been a bit of a dick move going on in the background here,
really?
By Valve. Just going, hey, look, you guys want to be paid more money? Wicked. All right, we'll give you more money. It sounds like on the surface of it, there could be some slightly aggressive poaching of staff, potentially.
No, I don't think that works when you take the whole company.
Yeah, when you take all of the company and the people that own it and everything. I don't think they would have done this unless it was a good deal for them. It probably secures their future and means they can underpin and guarantee, like, employing all the people that are currently working for their company for the foreseeable up until the release of this game and probably beyond that as well. And I imagine, we don't know because we don't know the details, but I imagine that would be the reason why they would go for this sort of deal. Didn't they do a very similar thing with the whole Portal
kind of thing as well? This is what I was talking to Dan off mic about earlier. The last time we saw a big hire like this was There were some students that made a game called Nar Bacula Drop. They were picked up to take that concept of using these portals in video games and created Portal. I'm interested to see whether this takes effect straight away or if this takes effect when Valley of the Gods comes out, and how, if that will aid Valley of the Gods as well. Because I don't know if you remember Firewatch, when that first came out, the first month or two, it was pretty broken. There was lots of sound issues. Mm. There were lots of stuttering and frame rate issues and things that needed a massive patch to sort out. And the game's now coming out to Switch, so I'm wondering if that's going to come out with the Campo Santo logo on it, or if that's going to have the weird Valve Head thing at the start of the game.
I'm not a big fan of the Valve Head thing.
No, it's creepy.
Creeps me out.
It is a bit creepy.
Yeah.
Big fat head valve thing.
Good job. If he gets angry, he needs to let off some steam.
Oh, God. Basically, this feels like something where, as I said, it's just underpinning the company and will hopefully give them license to do bigger and better things, but then also have the support of Valve for kind of releases. I have seen some people speculating, oh, does this mean this is only going to come to Steam? And that's not really the attitude that Valve have taken with previous kind of similar acquisitions that they've done. You've only got to look at, Portal, as we were just talking about. That came out on consoles and everything else, so I don't think that's going to be too much of an issue.
Well, and also, I think, unless your name's Sony, you're kind of the whole platform exclusivity and kind of platform-specific side of things is actually starting to wind down a bit, because you've got, Minecraft on the Switch, you can now earn Xbox achievements on that. There's potential for cross-play between console PC versions and mobile versions, things like Fortnite. There is kind of...
Sea of Thieves that does PC to Xbox.
Yeah, and, even like kind of communications platforms now with Microsoft buddying up with Discord.
Yeah, but there's a lot of rumours that Microsoft are doing everything they can to buy up a lot of... exclusives going forward, because they realize that that's something that they've lost and something that is losing them further and further ground to Sony. And also, you've only got to look at how successful some of Sony's kind of first party exclusives have been in not only being the highest rated games, but also being stuff that really generates more console sales as well.
Interesting times. I mean, hopefully, it will give them the resources and the room to stretch their wings and kind of really push the ideas that they really, with the kind of on their bucket list of things they wanted for the game, actually make those a reality for them. So that'd be cool if that is indeed the case.
Mm-hmm.
So let me tell you a tale, Coleman.
Go on then.
About the electronic musician Joel Zimmerman.
Are you a big fan of Deadmau5, Dan?
No, yeah. I'm a fan
Sounds
of
like
Joel Zimmerman.
You're a fan of Joel Zimmerman. Who is also known
as Zimmerman.
Can you mention a couple of Deadmau5's?
Joel Zimmerman. A couple of his big songs.
Yeah, yeah. Without Googling it.
There's The Locomotion.
Which you literally just
There's Locomotion. There's Twist and Shout. what else is there? Delilah.
Delilah's
that was a big
one
for him. Three Blind Mice. He loved that. That was one of his.
Thematic. That's good.
How about the Danger Doom era, Dan? Was that of any interest to you at all? Danger Doom era, when he partnered up with someone else? No, not really.
I didn't know he was in the Marvel Universe.
Good. Anyway, what is Deadmau5 doing?
Who?
The person that we're talking about, Dan.
No idea. I like Joel Zimmerman.
Good.
Okay. Deadmau5 is bringing out a game. He's working on it at the moment. He's got a team of people working with him. He streamed a little bit of footage from pre-alpha version of the game. It's a first-person shooter. It's being made in Unreal Engine, and it may come out in about a year's time. Other than that, we don't really know a lot about it. He was just mainly talking about technical specifications of the things that he's aiming to get with this game.
Did he mention if it has any musical connections, or is it just a game that he's
at the moment? It looks like it was kind of like a blocky playground, first-person shooter, shows some sniping with the gun, and there's a giant Deadmau5 statue looming over the...
I have a question.
Yes, right.
Why?
He's big into video games.
Yeah, he likes his video games.
So am I, but you don't see me making. Maybe I should make a video game.
You would if you could, Dan. You would if you could.
Maybe I should make a video game.
Maybe I should do a video games-based podcast.
Maybe I should do that.
Talk about podcasting instead of complete
I'd
and utter
disappear entirely up my own ass. What? Carry on.
Oh, do you want me to do this one as it's football and you guys are allergic to football?
Oh, God.
Right, following the Champions League final in Kiev this May, Konami will no longer hold exclusive rights to feature the competition in-game.
Boom!
And this is a bit, I get a bit confused because it said this isn't a 10-year partnership with the Cup, though it's, and but why is it unclear if the decision stems from UEFA, Konami, or a mutual choice? Because
there was a statement released by UEFA, and it basically it doesn't state whether UEFA are pulling their license if it's Konami that are they're not keeping up with their contractual obligations.
Right.
If it's because the license has run out, or they haven't stated what the reason is.
Right. Okay.
I can tell you that unfortunately, the reasons for were pretty UEFA thin, as it.
Oh God. I can tell you without 100% knowledge, but I would wager a large amount of money that this is just the. Okay, but this is just the fact that they had a 10-year deal, it came to an end, and everything else they're talking about is just PR spin put on the fact that this deal has come to an end, and it looks bad on Konami that they're not renewing it.
So what you meant was, I guess, this thing.
Right, but reading between the lines of what they've said and what's been talked about, and knowing that they had a 10-year deal in place previously, and that 10-year deal has now come to pass, I think that's the
ended,
case.
Or ended, as I like to call it.
Mm. Yes.
Anyway, there's none of that anymore.
No.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Gone are the days of officially named footballers and competitions in Konami football games. We'll get to the good old back to the good old days of Duvid Sawman.
They still didn't have the license to a lot of the teams anyway. They just had the license to the UEFA Cup, which literally, Champions League and UEFA Cup, but that literally just translated to having the intro music and the intro thing on a game and the thing. It is surprising how much that actually adds to the kind of grandiose nature of playing a game of that sort of type. But I also wouldn't be entirely surprised if it wasn't just the fact that there was possibly an extension deal on top of this that Konami could not afford to do because, like, PES is not doing as well as it previously did, and it's very much...
I have also moved on to other sugar-based treats, I must admit.
That's all speculation, though.
Yes, as I said, don't know cold, hard facts because they're not talking about it, but I would speculate that one of those two things is very true.
Can't believe they're giving you the cold shoulder like that, Tim.
Right. Well,
excluding you from their super secret fun time.
Well, it
meetings.
Also might be the fact that Konami is the only video game they still make these days.
No, they've got plenty. They have other franchises they can royally screw
apart
up
from
as well.
Crappy Metal Gear spin-offs.
Castlevania game coming to iOS.
Yeah,
Tim.
Good.
So you can play
not
that
just
on your
crap
iOS
Metal
device.
Gear spin-offs they make. They can make crap spin-offs of other stuff as well.
And
good.
They can make pachinko spin-offs.
Yeah, and all the pachinko machines in the world. Brilliant.
Anyway, yes.
New rule. Tim's not allowed to reap bullet points anymore.
Good.
All right, new rule. Okay. But here's an old rule. It's about pronunciation, Coleman.
Chinois.
So if you were worried about having, being dropped in the deep end in Chinois 3 and not knowing what happened in Chinois 1 and 2, well, we have good news for you. Dreamcast Chinois and Xbox's Chinois 2 are being remastered and coming to PS4, Xbox One, PC as well. And apparently that'll happen sometime this year.
Is Yay. It just me? I loved those games at the time. I have absolutely no interest in going back to them because I don't think they will have aged well at all.
No, but the people that kind of have false fandom that stems from nostalgia, and they've seen Shenmue and types of things, and they go, oh, Shenmue 3, I can't wait to see Shenmue. I'm just like, come on, give me a break. It's easier to say it
no.
quicker this
say,
way.
Say what?
Shenmue!
Thank you.
Shenmue!
Carry on.
So they see a lot of games. They've seen them in magazines, or they've seen them in top tens and all these kind of things. And then they see Shenmue 3 is coming out. And
good
they
lad.
Go, oh, okay, I want to play 1 and 2. The only way of playing that is on a Dreamcast or an Xbox. Sure, there might be a ROM out there somewhere. So remastering them is a good idea. It's not going to appeal to the person. If you painstakingly played through it and looked for little toys in the little machines, and you've done the driving the crane, the forklift around the docks, you're probably not interested in going back to the previous games.
I would have thought this is more likely to put people off the third game as well. So I think I don't necessarily think this is a great idea.
I mean, even back in the day, the Shenmue games were pretty niche, weren't they?
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
Well, they were in the UK anyway.
It was one of the first games that had, like, I remember having a, like...
Quick time events.
Quick time events, but also, like, a day-night cycle and things you had to do at a certain time of day, and you had to go to bed and sleep so you could get up for work the next day and all that type of stuff. And I just don't know how well that's going to translate to the modern world, basically. But hey.
Just to show you how old this game was, the QuickTime event was advertised as a feature.
Wow.
not long after it was labeled as lazy programming. So there you go.
Bag of steaming poo.
Moving on, we've got a bunch of release dates that have been announced.
Hit me with them, Coleman.
Kickstarter horror title Agony has finally got a release date, and that's coming to PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One on the 29th of May.
Yeah, I think this has got a VR release on the way as well.
Oh,
no
shut
one cares.
Up.
Well, there you
H1Z1
go.
It's coming to the PS4 next month with an open beta starting on the 22nd of May.
Excellent. H1Z1, the game that still doesn't know what it wants to be.
Yes, that one.
Brilliant.
But it's fun. So if you're looking to play that even earlier on the PlayStation 4, you can go to h1z1.com/PlayStation4 and sign up to the closed beta.
Didn't they just add a Battle Royale mode to that as well?
Of course they did. Everything's got Battle Royale mode.
Yep.
Tetris has got Battle Royale mode.
Yes.
100 Tetrominoes get dropped from a plane onto an island.
That's going to be one hell of a Tetris.
Yeah.
Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus, is coming out to the Nintendo Switch on the 29th of June.
It's a wonderful family game.
Motion controls as well.
Yeah, you can garrote a Nazi in the neck using your Joy-Cons.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Feel that. Vibrating HD rumble feedback.
Although this does look fantastically good.
And using HD rumble, you can actually tell how many testicles Hitler's got.
Good.
A bit like the ice cubes, but they've adapted the technology.
It's been ported by the same people that did the port of Doom, though, so that is generally good news.
Have you guys played Doom on Switch?
No, I still haven't actually, but
I've
heard
seen
very good
Digital
things.
Foundry's analysis of it, and they've done some really cool stuff to get it working at a kind of a solid, decent frame rate. So,
you've bought Wolfenstein 2 on PS4, Coleman, and I still haven't played it yet, but I'm really tempted to pick it up on the Switch just because it's a really odd fit.
Okay, Dark Souls Remastered for the Switch, that has been delayed at some point this summer.
And I think they've also delayed the network test they were planning as well, haven't they now?
Yeah, I think they've scrapped the network test, in fact.
Oh dear.
The PS4, Xbox One, and PC versions are still going to come out on the 25th of May, though.
And presumably they hit a problem that they couldn't solve in the time period, so better to delay it than not, basically.
So what is going on with that?
We don't know.
I just said. Presumably, they hit a problem that they couldn't solve in the time period, so they decided to delay it. And it's better to do that than release a broken game, Dan.
What?
The problem is, and it seems to be like the same thing with Wolfenstein 2 coming out so late. I'd seen a lot of complaint about the South Park sequel coming out, because that's just come out yesterday for the Switch for £50 or £55, something like that. It's a full release price, even though that game's had numerous sale cuts already. And. Yeah, it's that thing, you're waiting for the game to come out and you're like, is it really worth me getting a portable version of this game? And is it worth me playing, in some cases, like a lower powered version of this game compared to what I could be playing on the PS4 and the Xbox One and the PC?
For me, the big...
And Dark Souls, if it's going to hit that kind of issue and it's not going to be able to launch the same time as these things, that's going to give it a big problem.
Yeah, and well, my bigger problem with the South Park Fractured Butthole release was the fact that they didn't include all the DLC, because if they did, then that would have made it an actual attractive proposition to me. But you actually have to buy a season pass when 2/3 of the content's already out, and it's just, that just seems really gouging, and I don't like that at all.
Especially for the price as well.
Well, also, I've played the whole game, so I have no interest in buying it, but I thought it'd be a really good fit for the Switch, and I was like, well, if it comes with all the DLC, then that's a load of stuff I haven't played, and that would actually be worth buying. And now I'm just going to wait till it massively drops in price before I pick it up, possibly. So,
okay. Or even worse news, though, the Dark Souls amiibo has been delayed.
Oh, Coleman.
Yeah. That'll be out the same day as the cake.
No.
It still hurts.
So you're nice. Just going to have to praise the sun all by yourself, Coleman.
I'll have to lock it in an actual game. Yeah, and lastly, Strange Brigade, which I called my game of show in EGX 2017, is coming out on the 28th of August.
Looks like a fun one, that one.
Like four-player, horde mode, third-person shooters with some comedy in it. That's a good game.
It seems like a good time to release as well, just before it gets caught up in the melee of Christmas, basically.
Yeah. Dan, run through the updates.
Updates? We've already done one. Because I've already said Microsoft are buddying up with Discord, the free voice and text chat service, which we are talking on at this very second. And they're going to bake in it into some Xbox Live goodness, or bake some Discord goodness into Xbox Live. One of those two options. It's going to happen. It's already happened for Microsoft Insiders, I understand. So probably going to be coming everyone else's way in a couple of months.
Okay.
Plunkbat.
Pubbage.
Plunkbat.
Pubbage.
There's maps. There's more than one map. Usually when there's more than one map, you get to choose the map.
Good.
You can't at the moment, but you will be able to.
Good.
Choose a map. Coming to Plunkbat.
Right, 100 maps parachute onto an island.
They've only got two, Tim.
Okay.
No, or three. They have three parachute
onto an island.
That's good, though, because isn't it like a big problem with PUBG at the moment? People start, they load up, they get the wrong map, and they're like, oh!
Yeah. Load. But now you're going to have it where, because I think the original map's a really popular one, so you're just going to have it, no one's going to be playing the other one at all.
Oh, well.
Yeah, so there we go. But anyway, Splatoon 2's hit version 3. Confused? Yes, I am. It's available for all players, apparently, and I haven't played Splatoon 2. It looks good times, haven't played it.
It's fun, I've played it a little bit.
But something to do with introducing an X rank.
Expert,
that sounds dodgy.
Does that mean you're like well elite and stuff?
It means you're not playing on novice mode.
Yeah, Tim.
So if you're making a YouTube video, you probably want to play on X rank.
Yeah,
so
that's what you want to do. You want to be X rank.
Get their knickers in a twist.
And Santa Monica Studio has apparently released a patch of God of War. Because apparently the text was really small. I have noticed this has been a bit of a bugbear of mine in recent games as more and more stuff moves to 1080p. It seems that people are assuming that you're playing everything on a monitor that's about 3 feet from your face.
Or playing everything on a giant TV, I think it was the same.
Yeah, and it might just mean to be slowly turning into a doddery old but I genuinely have this problem with a lot of games at the moment.
Yes. To be fair, and we'll come on to this in a minute, but it was literally one of my only criticisms with God of War. But I'll correct you, I could be wrong unless this has happened in the last 24 hours, but it's not a patch that's out yet. It is a patch that they are planning and have talked about and will be released soon.
Cool. It happened in the last 24 hours, by the way.
Good.
And I was just going to say the text thing is the same problem we have had going through the Xbox 360 and the PS3, where they went from standard def to HDTVs. They changed all the font sizes.
Yep. Yeah.
Everyone on an SDTV, such as myself, was complaining they couldn't read it. And now we're having the same thing as 4K is introduced. But yeah, it's assuming you have a large 4K TV and not like a 20-something inch.
Yeah, but I've got a fairly decent size 4K TV, and I still found that I had to like get up off my couch to read half of what the menus were saying, basically, which is, yeah.
Buy glasses, mate. That's what you need to do.
Well, there's that. But no, it is genuinely like too small, and they have acknowledged that at least and taken away my one criticism of the game. So, hey.
Sat there with his tongue trying to get over his legs playing
now,
games.
God of War.
Yep.
God of War is something that I have not played.
Oh, more no. Fool you, Dan.
But you guys have played, but I want to play it.
Okay.
You do want to, definitely.
Because everyone says it is quite possibly the best thing with a beard since Abraham Lincoln.
Just by Jove, that probably calls for some form of review that doesn't involve spoilers.
Yes.
Yes.
Cool.
Excellent. That Good. Was seamless, Coleman. Thank
That's
you.
That's difficult, so we should probably just spoil it and get it over with.
All right, okay. So, now, Tim, you're a man who strikes me as... You've learned all you know about Norse mythology from the Avengers films, right?
Actually, no. But anyway...
Right, how else did you learn about Norse mythology? I'm now genuinely interested.
Just in general, it's something that's always been of some interest to me. I can tell you that the Erdzor gods are known of the gods of war, for instance, and that's why this is particularly a good place for them to have moved on to, basically. So there you go.
Right, what's the Allfrost?
The Allfrost? Do you mean the Bifrost?
That. I was just testing your knowledge. I was trying to intersperse it with some all-spark Transformers goodness is what I was trying to do, but it failed.
But anyone that doesn't know, actually, like, that's a kind of interesting touch point because the kind of Thor that we know from the kind of Marvel comics and has obviously been, you know, prevalent in the Marvel movies and stuff, that's not really the god that... is known from Norse mythology.
No, that's the god of Thor, mate. Wrong god. No, god of Thor,
indeed. But no, it's like a bit different and definitely, you know, framed in a different way. It wasn't necessarily a nice, benevolent god in the way that we think of, our Christian kind of god type thing, and it also definitely wasn't as friendly as he is portrayed in Marvel, basically, in the Marvel universe.
I'm rolling this back.
Yep.
Oh, but I was going to talk about when Loki turned into a wolf and had sex with another wolf and then gave birth to a weird wolf son. Can we talk about that?
Yep.
No, it's really, there's still that kind of sex in God of War. Marvellous.
No, there is no sex.
Now, this takes me to one thing, because I must say, by the time God of War 3 came around, and most definitely God of War Ascension, it was all getting a bit derivative. So, what's the big deal then with this God of War game?
So, David Jaffe's out.
Yep.
Right. Okay.
That's a good thing.
So, the big thing where we last kind of picked off with God of War was God of War 3 saw the end of the Greek gods. Kratos killed them all and moved along with his life. And then Ascension, they went, well, how do we carry... we'll do a prequel. So now we've passed all that. God of War, Kratos has traveled from the land of Greek mythology to the land of Norse mythology. You probably heard that everywhere now.
Was he on holiday or something?
Yeah, he's just like Butlins.
Well, no, in the universe that they've set up,
maniacal gods.
No, but in the universe that they've kind of created here, like it's kind of canon that basically all the kind of old world gods kind of all exist at, you know, different times throughout the thing, and that they're all kind of existing alongside each other.
Deities, then?
Yes.
Good.
So it's like the Norse gods are the new gods, essentially. But he doesn't... like it's weird because Kratos kind of palms them off as they're rubbish, they don't exist. But then later on he's like, well, they do exist. I've got to do something about that. Anyway, so you play a much more grizzled Kratos. You've been married. You've had a wife, another one, that you've not killed yourself this time.
Got a mortgage.
For a PlayStation portable game. Got a mortgage.
Spoilers.
Got a boy.
Middle-aged spread is setting in.
Boy, you got a boy who's called Boy. Or
Boy!
Wow. Well, can I just say, Kratos does not disappoint with names of things, does he?
No, I believe, is it Atreus, Tim?
Atreus, I think.
Atreus, which I think is the name of the horse in Neverending Story.
Really?
Right.
I think
okay.
so.
I didn't realise that.
I don't know why I know that. And, all was going sort of not so well. The wife has passed. He's left alone with the son. He's now a single dad. He's got a sexy dad beard. And,
right, okay.
They have to go on a quest to scatter the mother's ashes on top of a mountain. And then that's where things go awry.
And I don't know about you, Coleman. I really don't want to spoil too much of this for people because a lot of the game is about the discovery and everything that's going on. Mm. I will preface it with the fact that I wasn't the biggest fan of the previous God of War series. I didn't necessarily dislike it. I just hadn't played that much of it. I think we spoke about it previously on the show where I picked up the trilogy when that came out.
Right.
And then I kind of got stuck on the first one and didn't get to playing more of 2 and 3. But I had played some of those in the past and I played a bit of Ascension. But this, for me, stands head and shoulders above any of those games in terms of quality.
It does, but at the same time, like I was big into God of War, but I was just big into hack and slash at the time. I wanted really hard, fast hack and slash titles, and they kind of they've gone to the wayside a little bit. They've evolved into different things, like Nier Automata's turned into a big RPG. Platinum's got that way around, and Devil May Cry's pretty much died off at this point, and then it's more like the Souls-likes have now taken over. And this takes a little bit of inspiration from the Souls-like, not a lot where it's stupidly hard, but it is just a sort of slower-paced hack-and-slash in comparison to the sort of older, faster versions.
Yeah, don't you think that I get reminded in some of the like level design, world-building type stuff as well, because they've kind of taken it that... and that once you go through an area, there's a quicker route to get back through it or a quicker route to go through it again. And that's one of the things I absolutely love about the game. And one of my favorite things about the game is that it seems, and this is something where even large games have got this very wrong, aside from just the general pacing and the structure of the game, everything about the game seems very respectful of the player's time and not wasting my time in replaying content. And like the kind of checkpoints are very generous in terms of you die in combat. It doesn't go, well, you didn't save for the last 20 minutes, so you've lost 20 minutes of your progress. Like, it just goes, right, back in the fight, have another go. And as I said, in the world building and in every aspect it does, it kind of goes, well, is it a waste of the player's time to have to rewalk through this section or redo that? Or, and it just seems so very, as I said, respectful of the fact that my gaming time is precious to me and I don't want to waste that time. And that's one of the things I absolutely love about the game. It also
so is
does.
It like, is it like a successor to God of War in name only? And by that, I mean in a good way, that it's completely left all the old trappings, the slightly kind of puerile adolescent power fantasy stuff behind.
Right, it's not completely thrown out the baby with the bathwater. For me, it's kept all.
No, well,
of
he's
the...
got a son for a start, so yeah, he didn't throw that
exactly.
out.
But it's kept some of the elements that I think. A hardcore fan of the series would want to see kept. The main character is still quite an angry person.
Say it ain't so.
Yeah. And it's still, there's still the kind of the basis of it is very much a hack and slash game. But the things I think make it elevate it beyond the quality of lots of other games is the fact that you can really, and a lot of games say this but don't really do this, you can really tailor the system and the kind of systems of the game to how you want to play the game. You can build a character quite differently from someone how someone else built a character depending on how you want to use your skills in combat. And a lot of the skills that you upgrade, in a lot of games it would be like a add 2 to strength. And there is a bit of that in this, but a lot of the things that you add will be like, okay, if you add this in, you get this skill that you can use. And it will literally change the move that you have available to you in the game. To the point where it's nice to try those things out and all that type of stuff. And I've spoken to people that are playing the game very differently from how I'm playing the game.
Because that's one of the things I heard, is that there's such diversity in the weapons and the movesets that it's almost impossible to learn them all. It's kind of you find your own way in the kind of playstyle you like. And there's enough variety in the experience to actually support you playing it how you like, rather than some preconceived notion of how it ought to be played.
And basically the way without, and I don't want to spoil too much of that, but literally I play a lot of the game as a lot more of a ranged character than most people seem to that I've spoken to the point where I'm
that's
kind of ranged,
sitting far away from the telly on your telly and you can't read the text, Tim.
No, but I keep people far away and throw my axe at people and use Atreus to kind of bombard them with arrows. But then if people get up close to me, then I will literally cleave them in half type of thing. I've kind of balanced it my distance and my throwing and my ranged attacks are very good. But also if you come close to me, I will punish you for doing so, basically, kind of thing.
Oh, that's very nice. It's a bit sociopathic.
I've literally spent a lot of time ripping people apart. But I don't know about you, Coleman. Like,
and how's God of War, Tim, apart from your daily commute?
There's one boss battle early on that I won't spoil that is possibly one of my favourite boss battles ever in a video game.
Yowza. Okay.
Yeah, and like, but it is sensational. But the general boss battles, and I don't want to spoil the difference between that boss battle and the kind of one, but general boss battles, you're fighting big kind of ogres and trolls and stuff like that. And I don't know about you, a lot of the time you get into a boss battle in a game and you're like, oh, another boss battle, another one of these creatures. Oh, I guess I'll do this again type of thing. And in this game, I'm like, yes, boss battle, bring it on, troll, come on. That's rock. And I'm like really excited to get into it every time. And yeah, like, as I said, the level design is fantastic. Like, some of the things that I think you'll particularly appreciate, Dan, and someone that is a gamer, like, this is something that I think will appeal to a wide audience, but from someone in our position where we see a lot of games and we kind of know how a lot of those things work, just the technical side of things, the camera work and how that works, it's what, like, one continuous shot throughout the whole game. Yeah. And I don't even technically know how they did that. It's amazing in that sense.
They brought in a director of photography that's never worked with video games, just well, yeah, and TV shows.
And it really shows.
Yeah.
But then also, like, just the really intelligent use of conversation, like the whole, like, exploring off the past and world building and all that type of stuff is really well done, to the point where I feel drawn to go and do everything in the game, basically, because none of it feels like it's wasting my time. As I said, it feels respectful of me and my time as a gamer. But then also just the way that they carry on conversations. There's bits where you have conversations with your son in the boat, and he'll be like, it'll, like, some of it is real incidental conversation. And like, again, I don't want to spoil this too much, but there's like stories that Kratos tells to his son, and they are brilliant, and I don't want to spoil any of them at all, but they're really good. But the way they handle that conversation is great, because you can be just it's usually when you're in the boat and kind of rowing around, but the way it interrupts those conversations but then comes back to those conversations at a later point. But literally the son will say stuff like, Dad, you were talking about that earlier. And that will lead back into the conversation you were having before. And just, I've never seen a game handle those incidental conversations as well. Like, there was times in like LA Noire, which I've been playing again recently, where you have a conversation with your partner in the car, and if you get out and start the case, that conversation's completely lost. And this feels, again, like it's respectful of me as a gamer in terms of holding those conversations for when I'm ready to have them, basically.
Excellent. Well, my question is going to be, before I have to disappear, for it is time for me to disappear, sadly.
Right.
Kratos is a man. He likes to have the sex.
Yep.
Does he have that chat with his son? And is it really awkward?
No, there's none of that.
Let me tell you, boy.
That is the stuff that they've kind of thrown out. It doesn't feel as misogynistic and
yeah, they've taken all that out.
Yeah, all of that type of stuff's gone. But for the betterment of the game, and the stuff that they have put in its place is genuinely fantastic. I'm literally trying to decide exactly where it comes in my best games of all time.
Yowza. All right. Well, I shall be picking this up in due course then, by the sounds of things. But anyway, I'm afraid I have to get out of here.
Dan, you're going to have to listen to the rest of the show, though, because Rogue Aces is a game you need to pick up, because you basically voiced the game, Dan.
Did I?
Yes. Where's without knowing paycheck? I don't know how they did it.
But where's my paycheck? Okie dokie. Well, anyway, I've got to go and make a very boring work call now, because I work with people who live in America. And they've got a lackadaisical idea of when 3 o'clock in the afternoon is. So I've got to go. I'll leave you in the capable hands of Cole Man and Tim Man Person. So they'll say goodbye properly, but I've been Dan, and doodle bye.
Don't leave me, Dan.
Enjoy the next 4 hours of your life, Coleman. Bye!
Oh, I got Avengers to watch. Yeah. Anyway, onwards with the God of War. Now we've lost Dan.
Yes.
I just wanted to mention a couple of things. We haven't even mentioned the axe play, which is brilliant.
Yeah, which is fantastic.
So your main weapon is this Norse ice axe, which I don't know the name of the axe itself. You obviously have this for a melee attack, and you can throw the thing, and then you can call it back using the triangle button. And each time you call it back, you get that slight vibration.
Yeah.
The screen shakes a little bit as he does it, and it's probably the most satisfying weapon I've played in a melee game.
I don't know how they got that calling back thing so good, but there, lots of other games would have just made that, you know, you press it and it appears back on in your hand or something. But the fact that you can hit people on its way back as well, and you can actually use that as a genuine tactic is, and the fact that how well that feels. I've heard so many people just say that they just carry on chucking their axe even when they don't need to, because calling it back is so cool.
I've had a really fun moment just sort of beginning in the game when you kind of wander off on your own, just threw it into a tree and then just saw how far I could get away from the axe before calling it back, just to kind of do that Thor millionaire type thing. That was fun. The other thing as well, because we're playing it on two different sets. We're both playing it on PS4 Pros. And instantly, I had a very funny moment with that, because I've replaced my PS4. It's finally sounded like it's taking off too many times now. Managed to get a PS4 Pro through work. That was nice. And then playing games again, it's been whisper silent. I'm so happy. I loaded up God of War. Like, the second it dropped at midnight, I loaded it up and it went, oh my God, it can't handle it. So that was interesting. But I was playing, because you're playing on the 4K up-resi mode with the HD.
Yes.
And stuff.
The resolution, because it's got a selection between either resolution or performance.
Yeah, and I was playing that way, but in the very first kind of tutorial fight, I found it was quite sluggish in certain places. So I switched it to the performance mode, and which made sense for me anyway. I don't have a 4K TV, I have a 1080 thing. And my God, that felt so much nicer when I did that for the responsive controls I needed. However, reading into it, it's not a 60 frames per second. It's more like a 45 frames per second.
Right, okay.
It's 45-50, I think it was measured at. But it felt a lot better playing it that way for me, especially with the maneuvering and stuff.
See, I just haven't had a problem with it, like stuttering or juddering or anything that I would...
Oh, no. It's not that it's stuttering or juddering.
No.
It's just genuinely it felt slower playing it. And
right.
When you want a fast-paced battle, you don't want it to be slow. You don't want it to slug, you know?
As I said, I it's possibly something where if I did switch it into the other one, I'd be, you know, noticing more. But as I do have the 4K TV, and it's something I wanted to try and take advantage of. And oh my God, is that a beautiful game.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic looking. Like the lighting in some of the kind of, especially in the dark areas, which is weird to say, but in the kind of caves and stuff, the lighting that kind of spills out of other areas into those areas just looks fantastic. Again, it's one of those games where I'm like, one of those things where I'm like, I'm not sure I've seen a game as pretty as this in places, kind of thing, you know, like really fantastic looking.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with it. It's a beautiful looking game. I'm hoping to get to play some more. But certain films are out this week. that's eaten into my priorities and then back to work for me. So, hopefully I'll get to play a lot more of this soon.
Yeah, I'm hoping to finish the rest of it this evening, basically. I think I'm fairly close. I know I could have, having spoken to Diarmid and a few other people, I know I could have finished the game in the amount of time that I'm playing it. I think you can do it in 20 hours or so if you've kind of critical path through the game. But I really haven't wanted to do that. I feel that would be selling myself a bit short of the full experience if I didn't do that. And that's not often the way I feel in these games. And I've heard a lot of people say, I've got open world fatigue. And I'm one of the first people I know that spoke about a kind of open world fatigue as being something that was really bothering me in open world games. And I don't feel that at all with this game. I'm like, give me every inch of this game and that I can explore. And I can see me even coming back to it after completing it type of thing as well. It's one of those things where I literally can't think of exactly how to express how much I'm in love with this game at the moment, basically.
Okay. All right then. Well, that's God of War. We won't go any further into it for fear of spoiling things. But it's super fun. If you have a PS4 or a PS4 Pro, then it is a recommend.
Definitely.
All right, Tim, talk about your stupid little plane game.
Well, look, I feel properly spoiled at the moment because God of War we've been playing, and then I also got a couple of review codes for a couple of games and bought another game on my Switch, and all three of those games are absolutely fantastic, or I've been really enjoying them for different reasons and they've been scratching different itches for me. But Rogue Aces is the first one I'll talk about, and this came out a couple of weeks ago and I got a code for it at the time, but obviously we had the whole Rezzed thing last week, so that kind of took up most of the time. I think I mentioned it because it was at the show at Rezzed, but yeah, it's a roguelike dogfighting sim kind of in the Luftrausers mold, to the point where, and it was more knowing that Vlambeer had had problems with people cloning their games in the past. I didn't think this was a clone, and I didn't think this was too derivative of that, especially after playing more of it. I definitely don't think that's the case. But early on, at least, I kind of actually reached out to Rami from Vlambeer and said, are you guys okay with this? I'm assuming you're okay with this, but just kind of checking. And they were like, we are more than happy that there are more dogfighting games out there. So that in itself is good to know. But Rogue Aces is definitely, it's not quite as stylized in graphics, and I would say that's the one thing where it's a bit more cartoony, and the graphics are okay, like, but like nothing to kind of knock your socks off or be sensational. But the gameplay is where it really kind of get, you know, gets into its stride, basically. If you've played Luftrausers before, you have a fairly good idea about the kind of control system, but I would say this is actually slightly more nuanced than that. Basically, like, you need to be a bit more aware of kind of inertia and stalling your engine type stuff. It's not quite as complicated as that sounds, but basically the control method is a bit more nuanced than it was in Luftrausers, basically. But if anyone doesn't know, roguelike games, you probably get an idea of what that is, but basically you are, you know, once you go through a certain number of lives, and there is different modes, so I'll come back to it, but the main kind of campaign mode in this, you get three lives, so you get three different planes, and you take off from your little aircraft carrier, and you fly around a bit, shoot some planes out the sky, and it generally gives you a mission that you have to go and achieve, and then it'll be something like bomb this factory. And the reason why I think Dan would particularly love this game is I reckon it's very much in style with his sense of humor. Right. It kind of does the lines of, oh pilot, you seem to be a bit dead, kind of thing. And like, the first thing, when I first turned it on, it was like, oh, you're just in time for a spot of war. And I'm like, okay. And then it, like, one of the missions is to go and bomb the enemy's biscuit factory and stuff like that. Like, I just think, as I said, I just think Dan would be very much in line with his humor. And knowing that he liked Luftrausers, I think he'd like this style of gameplay as well, basically. Beyond that as well, you soon like realize that there are various different kind of arcade modes and various different campaign modes. Now, I say that, but I haven't unlocked all of them yet, because they unlock quite randomly. It's not just like doing well in the game will unlock all the different modes. It's doing a particular thing in the game will unlock a different mode that kind of makes sense when in that thing, but it's knowing what thing to do and what to do to unlock the different modes. So like, for instance, in the game you can, once your craft is taking too much damage, you can bail out and then deploy a parachute, and you can, in some modes, it's actually beneficial if you survive, and you get an extra bonus if you can land back on your aircraft carrier and stuff like that. But you can also, if you jump out of the plane at the right time, you can also jump into one of the enemy planes and steal their plane. Now, I happened to do that three times in a row. So I jumped out of an enemy plane into another enemy plane and again type thing. And doing that unlocked a new arcade mode called Hot Potato, which is all about literally just trying to do that as many times in a row as you can. As I said, there's various different arcade modes. The survival is the first one that you unlock, and that is literally just, in the main game, you have like kind of missiles and bombs for destroying more major targets and kind of buildings and trains and all these type of stuff. But in the survival mode, you just have your base machine guns, and it's just you against a load of planes. You can't land and refuel like you can in the main campaigns, and it's just kind of trying to see how long you can survive and build up your score multiplier and stuff like that. The main campaign is where you have the like different missions, and it kind of ever evolving. As soon as you finish one mission, you land back on your carrier. That also refuels your plane in terms of the actual fuel that you have, but also gives you new bombs and new missiles as well. And then it also gives you your next mission to do, and you can just continue doing those missions. Basically, you lose lives obviously if you crash and burn, but then you can also, if you bail out And don't make it back to kind of neutral territory or your territory. If you like bail out it behind enemy lines, and like depending on the mode that you're in, you can usually then clear the area below you by kind of like lobbing loads of grenades, which it generously kind of gives you. But if you don't clear that area or you just land behind enemy lines, you can get captured, and that can be game over no matter how many planes you have left on your thing as well, basically. And like I said, it's got that kind of roguelike element where it, once you're done there, that's it, back to the beginning. But it also, you kind of level up through the different modes in the game. You can level up, and it gives you access to some bonuses that you can get by defeating different enemies in the game. They're like a higher missile capacity, a higher bomb capacity, a cannon that fires faster or does more damage, or you can get armor and all these type of upgrades, and you can get those by destroying other planes within the game. But you can also get access to a few of those at the start of the game, and the higher level you go, the more of those you can get access to. You get, basically you get a choice of more of them through certain levels, and then when you get to certain levels, you actually get more of those that are available to you as well, basically. So it does get a little bit easier as you go through, because you get access to those things, but it's definitely not an easy game overall. The other mode that I've unlocked so far is kind of the frontline campaign, and that's a bit more of a detailed kind of long campaign type mission where you're basically got a succession of islands, and you have to go and destroy certain targets there to conquer those islands, and you're also battling against kind of boss characters there as well, that kind of, as you advance across the island or don't, depending on your success or not, they will also march across that map and then come and meet you where you are, and you'll have to not only deal with them, but then deal with them, then clear the level to then to carry on and progress, basically. I still haven't unlocked all the levels, but I've been playing it for I don't know how many hours already, 15 to 20 I would say probably already. And I really, really like it. It's not that high in price. I can't remember exactly how much it is. I think it's around that sort of £8 mark or so.
£1,000.
But yeah, but like I can heartily recommend it. I if you were a fan of Luftrausers, or if you're a fan of it's dogfighting, and but it's kind of, yeah, from the sort of third person perspective but side on type of thing. It's difficult to explain if you haven't seen it. But yeah, as I said, for the, especially at the price point it's at, and for the amount of hours that I think you'll get out of it, it's definitely a recommend from me, basically. Really enjoyed it.
Okay.
So yeah. Really, yeah, good.
I watched you play a little bit of it when we were on our way to Res. Because that's the funny thing about the Switch. You can take it on the tube.
Yay.
Yeah, it definitely gave me vibes of Dogfight on the Amiga back in the day.
Yeah.
Which, similar game, but without the missions. It was a more single player or two player, just dogfights, essentially. But it had that kind of mechanic to it.
Yeah, and the comedies kept me chuckling, and as I said, I think it would really appeal to Dan, but I think it's generally of wide appeal anyway. So yeah, a good recommendation for that. Also on Switch, I should mention, because I'd like to do so when we're doing it, but I did get a review code for Rogue Aces. It didn't really affect my opinion, but just so you know. Likewise, I also got a review code for a game called Wild Guns Reloaded. Now, I don't know if you remember this game, Mr. Coleman, as in the original Wild Guns.
I remember Wild Guns.
Okay, because I slightly misremembered it, to be honest. When I was going in and I did a bit of research just to kind of check my facts a little bit, but I was trying to struggle with if this was an arcade game back in the day. I remembered it being on SNES, and that's where it is, but yeah, apparently it was never an arcade game as far as I can work out, and it's something that they seem to make in a kind of quick period in between other games, but then became a bit of a cult classic, because yeah, it's a bit different, but yeah, it's an odd...
Perhaps mistaking it for Metal Slug with the arcade port.
No, the thing that I remembered it as a kind of, not necessarily steampunky, but more kind of sci-fi Sunset Riders, basically. And that's not totally dissimilar from what it is. It still feels... And the reason why I thought it was an arcade game is because it feels very much in the arcade game vein of kind of coin guzzling type, you know, it's that, it's the old school kind of pattern recognition boss battles, these people are really hard type thing, and all that type of stuff. And it's got this kind of weird mechanic that I don't really remember seeing in other games. But basically, it's almost like a light gun game where, you know, you're shooting the different targets across the screen, but you also have a character in third person at the bottom of the screen, and you can shoot bullets, but if you get hit by one of the bullets, if that character model takes damage, then you lose a life type thing. And it's also weird in the fact that if you are holding down the shoot button, you will kind of shoot in place but still be able to move the character. And then if you let go of the shoot button, you can then move the targeting reticle. And that was a really odd thing to get used to at first. Like, it was kind of like patting your head and rubbing your stomach type thing. I also kind of worried that this wasn't particularly, at first at least, I was a bit concerned that this wasn't particularly well balanced for single player. And I still kind of maintain that that might be the case. The one thing I didn't know, and I wouldn't have guessed this from the design of this game, is the original game only had two characters in it. Yeah. And the two characters they've added, I much prefer to the base characters, basically. The one that I played the most with is a kind of dog that has a kind of... what's the right word? A kind of mech, flying mech thing that does it shooting for it. And the dog kind of jumps around. And if the mech gets hit, it kind of interrupts its shooting. But it's only the dog that gets hit that kind of takes damage. And that seems to be much better at dodging incoming fire than some of the other things. But the original game was based on two characters called Clint and Annie. And Annie had hired Clint as a bounty hunter to get revenge on some gang of people that I think had killed her family or something. But anyway, so those two characters, I think, but they've added two characters for this version of the game. I think they might have been additions because there was a recent re-release on PlayStation 4, possibly. It might have been actually PlayStation 3. It was something where, there was a version that was previously out on another... This game has previously been out on a console previously, basically. But there's some additions that they've made particularly for the Switch edition, but I think the two characters were added previously, possibly. But this Switch edition comes with a... Oh my God, I'm glad they added... like mega easy mode type thing, because otherwise I would not have seen the later stages of the game, because as I said, it's really like that kind of old arcadey pattern recognition. You have three lives, if you died, that's it. And also it's got a ranking system, and if you continue, it doesn't enter that score into the ranking, which I can understand, but it's a bit weird. But yeah, like it's something where I'd like to play, because it does actually play in up to four player, which is more than the original did, and I'd really like to see it in like three and four player and see if it's slightly better balanced and slightly more fun in that. But then I think everyone would really have to have a good idea of what they were doing as well. It's a nice blast from the past, and it is polished up nicely from the previous game. I think I am enjoying the game, as I've got better at it, I've enjoyed it more as well. But I worry that people coming to it from like kind of a new audience, people that didn't play old arcade games might not get quite as much enjoyment from it. But if that's something that, you know, it's something that appeals to you, then it's really good. Like it's good for that sort of sense. It is a hard game. Like even in the kind of easy mode, it's quite difficult to get through the first couple of levels. But as I said, they have added a kind of, and I can't remember what they're called. I think it's beginner or something, but it's below the easy level. And basically it doesn't matter how many times you die. You just keep on going, basically. And it's nice in so much as that means I got to see the rest of the game, but it does take away kind of any of the challenge to it, basically. It's even with that in mind, it's still not as easy as it would be if you were just pumping money into an arcade machine, because you get bombs throughout the game that kind of, it's a panic button to clear the screen type thing. And you only get three bombs, and you can find more bombs throughout the game, and you kind of get to learn when is a good time to use those bombs so that you'll get another bomb in return, or just a good time to shoot a character to get another bomb as you go. But especially initially, like, it just feels a bit weird. You use those three bombs in like the first couple of levels of the game, and then you've got no bombs throughout the rest of the game. There is a kind of system where if you manage to shoot enough targets without getting hit, it upgrades you to a better weapon in the game that's like one of the best weapons in the game. I think it's better than the stuff that you can pick up, possibly. But that allows you to then shoot people, and it's got that kind of level to it as well. So that's all right. They've also added, for the Switch version, they've added a boss rush mode, which is kind of a nice addition. But like when I was playing it, I think there's a few more people now. I think it's up to about 25. But initially when I was playing it, there were only four people in the world that had actually got through the boss rush mode initially. As I said, I think that's gone up to more like 25 that has been out for a couple of weeks. But yeah, again, still quite hard. The other thing, like as I said, I've been enjoying it and I do like it. The one caveat that comes with is I think this is, for what it is quite a high price of admission. It is £25, which for a Switch game, for what you can get in like, you know, if you bought, you could literally buy five other games for that much on the Switch at the moment. And considering it is a hard game, and I think you'll only get the most out of it, you're playing in multiplayer, that it becomes a slightly more tricky recommendation. But as I said, it's an arcade game, blast from the past, and I've been enjoying my time with it as well. So yeah. But yeah, I won't go on as long because I know we're a bit over time, but I also picked up a little game called Streets of Red, which is a kind of, again, a roguelike. It's been playing roguelike, but it's kind of a Streets of Rage in a kind of not quite like monochromatic, almost kind of duotone type stuff. But yeah, like it's a Streets of Rage type game where it will literally delete your save if you die. But you can mitigate that slightly by picking up tokens that allow you to continue. And yeah, that's really fun. It's basically computer game characters, and it all starts in a convention that's a bit like PAX. I can't remember what they call it, but it's basically PAX. That convention gets attacked by zombies, and then this red fairy turns up and basically empowers these four characters with video game kind of characters. Basically, it makes their cosplays into real life type thing.
Costume quest.
Yeah, a bit like that. And kind of imbues them with powers. But then you're fighting kind of horror game boss characters. So like there's a thing that's very much Alien. And they've got all without the license, but very much Alien. There's a kind of Terminator type thing boss that you fight. But one of the bosses is Jim Sterling, just randomly. But yeah, that's really good fun. And that's one that I want to play with you at some point, Coleman, because I think it'll be even more fun in multiplayer as well. But that's on sale at the moment for £5. And again, a good recommendation, especially at that price, basically.
All right, that is everything this week. That's absolutely everything we got to get through related to the gaming news and the games that we have been playing this week. But mm-hmm. We still have a little matter of Tabletop Tuesday to get through. So Tim's going to talk about Tabletop Tuesday.
Yeah, each and every Tuesday, for anyone that doesn't know, we have an event called Tabletop Tuesday in the Loading Bar in Dalston. And if you come along and play our feature game on the nights of the feature game, you have a chance of winning a copy of the game at the end of the night. Yeah, last week was good fun, and thank you for everyone that joined us last week. This week's feature game is a little game called Cobra Paw. Now, it is kind of a family-friendly kind of game, but again, I think it's going to be one that's good for drunk people, but it's also kind of got like really nice like sort of tactile pieces to it, almost like kind of domino pieces with a bit of a curve to them. But yeah, should be a good fun game, and if you come along and play with us on Tuesday, you could possibly win yourself a copy at the end of the evening. There are more details on bigredbarrel.com on the top left hand corner of the site, or you can come along to Tabletop Tuesday and join our come along to meetup.com and join our group. If you search for Tabletop Tuesday on meetup.com, we now have over 1,600 members in our meetup group, so you can come along and join the ranks of people there and get all the details on our upcoming Tabletop Tuesday events. Cue.
Not a lot of shout-outs this week, so...
Boo hiss.
There is one that I do want to draw attention to. We got a comment from AJ Grand Scratton, who is from Dallas Studios.
Mm-hmm.
They are the folks behind Nothing to Fear.
Yep.
And they were just saying thank you for including them on the lineup, so that was very nice of them to comment. And, yeah, hope to talk to them in future and maybe... get my hands on that game.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to play, unfortunately, but I have heard good things thanks to the other people on BRB.
It's a point-and-click platformer, though, Tim.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, it still sounded interesting enough that I want to see exactly how that works.
Okay. Anyway, all right, so we'll leave it there for episode 290 of the Big Red Barrel UCast.
UCast!
That's what we call it now.
UCast!
Isn't UCast one of those platforms pre-Twitch?
Possibly.
Okay. So for episode 290 of the Big Red Barrel UK podcast for this week, I have been Coleman.
I may have been Tim.
10 more to go.
Now.
Oh my God.
Ah, it's a 10.
Are you still going?
Yes.
We're just about to finish.
We just did the whole I might have been Tim. And then you
really?
Popped in.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I'm back in time. I'm still Dan. I cannot, seriously, in all seriousness. I have just taken a work call, and I thought, all right, that's got to be it, you know. They'll be wrapping up the show. But you're still going.
Well, we were pretty much done.
No, but you weren't done. You weren't done.
We were like 3 words away from being done.
Really? Were you? Were you, Coleman?
I was just about to say until, as in next time, and you jumped in.
Yeah.
That was impeccable timing.
Good work.
So, until next time, dear listeners, toodle bye.
You and your ears are quite welcome for the podcasting goodness that you just heard. Why not roll on over to BigRedBarrel.com for more podcasts, news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.
Dan, do you want to trust me on something?
Yeah, okay.
Go buy Rogue Aces, and if you don't like it, I will double the amount of money you paid for it.